The eagle has landed.
You are about to embark upon the great crusade.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
I consider myself the luckiest man.
I have a dream today.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Hello, welcome to Speaking of History. My name is Eric Langhorst. I'm an 8th grade American history teacher in Liberty, Missouri, and you're listening to a podcast that has a focus on education, technology, and history. You're listening to podcast number 70, and this is being recorded in Washington, D.C. on February 23rd, 2007. Well, this morning I was doing some of my things around Washington, D.C. and stopped by Ford's Theater, and I was very fortunate to be walking into the theater just as one of the park rangers, in this case it was Lauren, was beginning one of her presentations. There were several student groups in there, some other different visitors, and she gave a great rendition of what happened on that fateful night in Ford's Theater. So I went ahead and taped it while she was giving her presentation, and then gained her permission after the presentation to put it on the podcast. So I thought this might be interesting. This is exactly what you'd hear if you brought a school group into Ford's Theater. I included a couple pictures along with the blog. One picture simply shows the balcony where Lincoln was watching, or the box where Lincoln was watching the play. And then also, after reading Manhunt, I really wanted to stop by the theater and look at one particular object, and that was the compass that John Wilkes Booth had with him on the 12-day escape that he had after the assassination. And if you read Manhunt, they kind of talk a little bit at the end about that compass. And so I wanted to go back and look at that. So I included that picture on the blog as well. So here's a presentation by Park Ranger Lauren at Ford's Theater for any visitor when they come into the theater.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Lauren. I'm one of the rangers here at Ford's Theater, and I'm going to spend the next few minutes telling you about what happened here. But before I do that, I do have a request that, again, if you have a cell phone, just make sure that the ringer is turned off during the talk. And I know sometimes chaperones need to take calls. If you need to do so, just head out into the lobby. And then also, it's fine to take pictures. I just ask that you don't take them during the talk. Then afterwards, you have plenty of time to do so. As you probably figured out, the presidential box is up to your right there where you see the American flags and the picture of President Washington. And I'll talk a little bit more about why it looks that way when I'm talking about what happened here. Something else to note, the stage behind me is set for Mark Russell. He's a political comedian. This is an active theater, and something that's sort of neat to think about while you're here is that you can actually come and experience theater here just as the Lincolns did in the 1860s. And it's just been a working theater since 1968. So there was an over 100-year gap in between. Typically, when you come to visit, there's a full set on the stage, but we're in between shows and just have a comedian here for 1 week. So that's why you see a piano behind me. This open space in front of the stage is an orchestra pit, so there would have been live musicians at the time that Lincoln was coming to the theater. Usually when there's a set on the stage, they build the stage out over the orchestra pit. There's very rarely live music here at Ford's Theater. But if there is, they sometimes put them down in the pit, or again, they'll build the stage out over the pit. Something else to note is that this theater is a reconstruction of the original theater. So you walk through the same brick facade that Lincoln walked through into an entire reconstruction. When it was rebuilt to look like it did when Lincoln was here in 1865. But you're seeing 1960s materials. From the time of Lincoln's assassination until this reopened as a live theater, this was actually a federal office building. And it was sort of a way for the government and everyone to just sort of erase what had happened after Lincoln had died here. There are people literally protesting out front after Lincoln died, saying that they would torch the building if it reopened. It was a very, very unpopular idea to have theater back. Then 100 years pass, everyone wants a theater back, so they have to recreate it. So I think it's just important to understand what you're seeing while you're here. A few other things. Downstairs is a museum. A lot of artifacts from the night of the assassination. You're welcome to visit afterwards. You'll find steps in the lobby down to the right when you go up. Then across the street, the house where the president died the morning after he was shot here is also open. That is the original structure. Please be aware, though, that typically about 15 to 20 people fit in there at any given time. So allow a little bit of time if your whole group is going over. Now, how many of you have actually been in here before? Okay, it looks like a handful, maybe a dozen. Okay. How many of you have we knew it was National Park Site when you arrived today? I see four hands in the back. Five or six. We don't look like a national park. That's why I asked that question. I think that sometimes people get here and they see park rangers and it just doesn't quite make sense. We're what's called a National Historic Site. So it's part of the National Park System. We're the same kind of ranger that you would see at a Yellowstone, a Yosemite, a Grand Canyon. There are, over a dozen different designations in the National Park System of different types of places. And usually the name just explains the use of the place or why it was designated. And there was a historical event that happened here, hence the name National Historic Site. Now, we're one of over a half dozen sites related to Abraham Lincoln in the National Park System. I'm going to ask for some help to try to name some of the other sites. So, can you think of anywhere else related to Lincoln? The Lincoln Memorial, which I'm sure you're either going to or you've been to. Wayne Backus?
Gettysburg.
Okay, so we've got the Lincoln Memorial, we have Ford's Theater, we have Gettysburg. Anything else? There's home in Illinois, that's very good. Is Dalton home in Illinois? We have his birthplace in Kentucky, his boyhood home, and my wonderful home state of Indiana. So there are all of these places that span his entire life, birth to death, and afterwards. And Mount Rushmore is also a place related to Lincoln. And really, you could stretch it to think of any Civil War site is also related to President Lincoln. And he's a man that died over 140 years ago. So why are we all here? It's really interesting to think about that while you're in a place like this. And I know a lot of you came on a bus, you're seeing everything in D.C. in 4 or 5 days, or however long you're here. It's a bit of a whirlwind, it's sensory overload. But you were brought here for a reason. And Lincoln's assassination changed the course of American history. And that's why you're here. And that's exactly why you'll go over to the Lincoln Memorial. It's also interesting to think about whether or not the ways that we remember him have something to do with what happened here. Would he be such an icon if he hadn't been murdered at Ford's Theater? And we'll never know the answer to that. But the moment that shot was fired here, Lincoln became a martyr. And he became an American icon. And his memory might have been a little different had that not happened. He still had 4 years to serve. And he was killed right at the end of the Civil War. So this was a time when we had had over 4 years of fighting, and we essentially had two separate countries. Now, who's fighting during the Civil War? North and the South. And what was going on in the South that wasn't going on in the North? Slavery, exactly. So we had literally had states that either leave the Union, created their own government, they had a capital in Richmond, Virginia, they had a president, they had a capital, they had a constitution. So you have two separate Americas fighting. During that time, over 600,000 Americans died. Now, to give a little perspective, that's over 5 million Americans in our current population. So imagine in the course of 4 to 5 years, losing 5 million American citizens. So if we were living during that time, there would have been very few of us that hadn't lost property, hadn't lost a friend, or a family member. As the Civil War was sort of wrapping up, this is early April of 1865, the month that Lincoln was killed, the southern capital in Richmond fell. And a few days later, there was a surrender of the largest Confederate and Southern Army at a place called Appomattox Courthouse, Virginia. And when that happened, the events at Appomattox, Washington, D.C. was in a complete frenzy. This was a Union or a Northern city. President Lincoln was living at the White House. And President Lincoln and his supporters believed very strongly that the Southern states did not have a right to secede. And initially, his only goal was to keep the Southern states in the Union. It did turn into being a goal to also abolish slavery. So everyone in Washington is celebrating as the troops surrendered. There's parties, there's parades, there's fireworks. And 2 days after that surrender, 6 blocks from here at the White House, Lincoln gave a speech about the Southern states coming back into the Union. At the speech, he talked about giving voting rights to the freed African American soldiers that had fought for the Union. It was a very, very controversial subject. He talked about bringing the states back in without further conflict and without punishment to either side. You can imagine from either perspective, that was also very controversial, that idea that they would all just move forward without punishing anyone for what had happened during the war. In the speech that day at the White House, this is April 11th of 1865, there was a young actor, he was 26 years old, named John Wilkes Booth, standing in the audience. John Wilkes Booth was from Maryland, and during the war, Maryland was a border state that had both Southern and Northern support. And John Wilkes Booth throughout the war was performing on stages just like the one here at Ford's Theater. Lincoln saw him perform here about 2 years earlier. And he was very popular. He was said to be one of the best looking men of his day, a very charismatic, very talented. But in addition to that, he was a very strong Confederate sympathizer. So as he's traveling, performing at theaters, he's also going into Canada for the Confederate Underground. He's going into the South as well. And most people that saw him on the stage never would have known about that. He also planned a kidnapping of the president during the war. He had hoped to take Lincoln down to Richmond, the Confederate capital, and trade him for Confederate prisoners of war. But that had never happened. So he's standing at the White House. He's listening to Lincoln talk about bringing the Southern states back into the Union. The Southern states are his country. And he's feeling very, very desperate. He's feeling very angry. And at some point during that speech, we believe that he made a decision that he must kill the president to save the Southern states. This is sort of a progression from something like a kidnapping to something much more drastic. He believed that by killing Lincoln, he would ensure the Southern states would not rejoin the Union, and he would ensure that slavery could continue in those Southern states. So in the days following that speech on the 11th, John Wilkes Booth started to plan an assassination. He had a group of friends and acquaintances that he'd worked with on the kidnapping plot. He started to speak with them about possible ideas of where they'd find Lincoln and how they would carry out this plan. On the morning of April 14th, 3 days after the speech, Booth walked into Ford's Theater to pick up his mail. Again, he had performed on the stage here before. It was very common for an actor to pick up mail at the theater. He's getting his mail here, and he learns that the White House had already sent word over to the theater that President Lincoln would be attending a comedy that night called Our American Cousin. Booth found himself in an absolutely ideal situation. Here he is in a building that he's performed in before, and the man that he's hoping to murder will be here that same evening. That day, we know that John Wilkes Booth is coming and going from the building. It was without question, though. And no one here knew what he was planning for the evening. And we know now that he was actually planning the assassination throughout the day. President Lincoln was six blocks from here at the White House, conducting an average day. He and Mary Todd even had time for a carriage ride in the afternoon before they came over to the theater. As the theater was preparing for the show, they advertised that the president would be coming that night. They were able to sell almost 2,000 tickets for the show. Our current capacity, is just under 700. We see about 682 in here. At that time, they claimed to be able to put about 2,500. They were seating people on all three levels. Today, we're only able to seat on the bottom two levels. If you had been here at that time, your seat would have been about a third smaller. It would not have been fixed to the ground. And there would have been standing room only. They did not have a fire code here in the 1860s. The top balcony had wooden bench seating. So imagine a very, very crowded, very loud environment. And a lot of people were buying tickets that day for the theater to specifically see President Lincoln. The theater also decorated the box that you see to your upper right. If you look to your left, you see a box with a center wall and lace curtains. That's how it would have looked on an average night. It's two separate boxes. They took out the partition and placed George Washington on the box just to signify that it was the presidential box. That evening, the show started around 8 p.m. Again, it was a British comedy. It was called Our American Cousin. The presidential party didn't arrive until about 8:30. They arrived by carriage, pulled up in front of the theater onto 10th Street. Out of the carriage came President Lincoln, his wife Mary Todd Lincoln, Major Henry Rathbone, and Rathbone's fiance Clara Harris. And the couple were just acquaintances or friends of the Lincolns. They stepped into the theater at around 8:30, made their way up the curving staircase in the lobby that put them up into the first balcony or the dress circle. Because the show was already underway, the actors on the stage actually stopped the show, and the orchestra in the pit in front of the stage played Hail to the Chief and other patriotic music. The presidential party made their way around towards the presidential box. When they were seated, President Lincoln was over to our far right as we face it. His wife, Mary Todd, was to his right or our left. And then the far left of the box as we face it was their guest, Clara Harris. Behind her on a sofa was her fiancé, Major Rathbone. After the party was finally seated, the production on the stage resumed. John Wilkes Booth returned to the theater after having left in the afternoon at around 9 p.m., so this is about 30 minutes after the Lincolns had arrived. Because the show was going on, Booth came in a backstage door that allowed him to leave a horse at the stage in the back alley and enter without anyone in the audience being able to see him. He opened up a door on the floor of the stage and walked underneath it while the show was going on above him. He came up on the opposite side, walked up a long hallway out onto 10th Street, and entered the Star Saloon, which is located next door. You'll see a box office in that same place today. Just like the theater, Booth was a very familiar face at the Star Saloon. It was a place that he went to frequently, so the patrons knew him, the employees knew him. He was seen drinking whiskey, socializing, and just waiting around. He stepped back into the theater several times to check the progress of the show, and around 10 p.m. he decided to return to the theater for a final time. He came back into the theater through the front door, certainly didn't need a ticket, the employees would have recognized him, made his way up the same staircase that the Lincolns had walked up, and began to make his way through the crowd towards the presidential box. In 1865, there was not full-time presidential security. I know in our world that's something that's extremely hard to imagine, but this was a time when Americans could literally just walk up to the White House and talk to their own president. So as the crowd is seeing John Wilkes Booth, who they recognize, going around towards the presidential box, a lot of them later noted in accounts from that night that they thought that the president was calling on Booth. Booth was able to make his way around towards the presidential box. He found a White House employee who was not armed. They had a conversation of some kind. We don't know exactly what was said, but it ended with Booth entering the presidential box. When he entered the outer door, he closed it behind him and found himself in a hallway behind the presidential box. From the hallway, there's two doors that would be one into each part when it's separated. So John Wilkes Booth stood in that hallway where no one outside the theater could see him, and they were focused on the show anyhow. He stood for a few moments, waited until only one actor was on the stage. Is that one actor named Harry Hawke said what was supposed to be the absolute funniest line in Our American Cousin. As all 1,700 people in this theater erupted with laughter, they're clapping, they're carrying on. He opened up the inner door, he pulled out a single shot .44 caliber Derringer pistol, he held it about 6 inches behind Lincoln's left ear, and he fired. Instantly, the president slumped over unconscious in his chair, where Todd Lincoln tried to hold him upright. As Major Rathbone finally figured out what was going on, he leapt up from the sofa he was seated on. He attacked Booth. Booth dropped the gun that he had shot the president with. He pulled out a knife. As Rathbone and Booth were struggling, Rathbone was stabbed in the upper left arm down to the bone. Booth then made his way to the front of the box, where he jumped out, down onto the stage in front of the entire audience. As Booth was jumping out, he caught his boot spur on the blue flag up above George Washington's portrait. That caused him to land very awkwardly down onto the stage. A lot of accounts said that they saw him landing down on one knee. A lot of scholars think that's when he broke a bone in his left ankle that night. But he was still able to stand. He came to the center of the stage. He raised the bloody knife that he had stabbed Rathbone with, and he yelled a Latin phrase, sic, semper, tyrannis. It means thus, always to tyrants. A tyrant is an absolute ruler. So after making that statement, he made his way out to the backstage door he had first entered. He was able to get onto the horse he had waiting, and he rode out through the back alley. Initially inside the theater, there was a great deal of confusion. If we had been in the audience that night, it's likely we never would have heard the gunshot fired. Booth chose a moment when the crowd was reacting to the show. Then, as we saw a famous actor hitting the stage, many of us would have thought that what we were seeing was part of the show. And that allowed a few seconds for Booth to exit the show. That soon turned to just absolute and utter chaos. Clara Harris, the Lincoln's guest, started to scream from the box that the president had been shot, and audience members literally started climbing over each other in the chairs to get out onto 10th Street. There was a young doctor named Charles Leal that was up in the dress circle right by the presidential box. He was the first to make his way in, and he believed that he was going to find a stab wound like Rathbone had. So he and others actually started removing Lincoln's clothing looking for that stab wound. He eventually found just a single entrance wound on the back left side of Lincoln's head, and he was the first to make a statement that the wound would be mortal. Other doctors soon joined Leal in the box. As they were assessing Lincoln, they agreed that Lincoln would not survive. But they had to decide what his fate would be. Would he be removed from the theater? Where would he go? They decided that he should not be moved very far because he might die in transport on the way back to the White House. So a decision was made that instead of leaving him here in the theater, they would carry him down the front staircase and out into the street. So that's exactly what they did. By that time, the street was crowded with hundreds of people. Across the street at a privately owned house, there was a border
that was reading in the front parlor. The house was owned by William and Anna Peterson. They were German immigrants. The boarder's hearing all this noise outside, the crowd. He steps out onto the porch to see what's going on. At that point, hundreds of people are standing outside, and Lincoln is being held up by Union soldiers. The boarder stood from the porch and waved the men into the house, so Lincoln was carried into Mr. Peterson's boarding house, and he was there for about 9 hours. They did not attempt to save his life, just simply to make the end of his life as comfortable as possible. He died the next morning, just after 7 a.m. This would be the morning of April 15th of 1865. John Wilkes Booth, after escaping out of this theater, as all of that chaos is ensuing here, he's out through southeastern D.C. on horseback, made his way into southern Maryland. He had his broken leg set at Dr. Samuel Mudd's, and he continued to travel for 12 days. He was eventually able to cross the Potomac into northern Virginia, and Union cavalry found him hiding in a tobacco barn on the 12th day. So they set the barn on fire. The idea being that as the barn's burning, he's going to come out so that he can be captured alive. As the barn was burning, one of the soldiers went around to the side of the barn, and he fired his weapon. Booth was hit in the neck. The shot paralyzed him from the neck down. The soldiers were able to pull him out, and he died that same day. There are claims that Booth said, and we'll never know if this is true or not, but there are claims that he said, "Tell my mother that I died for my country," as he was taking his last breaths. He kept a journal as he traveled during those 12 days. He also wrote letters. There's a letter to his mother that said, "You may not understand what I'm doing now, but I will be remembered for the ages for what I have done." And when I read that, I thought of the Lincoln Memorial. We have all of these places that we talked about to remember someone like President Lincoln. And the man who killed him believed that he would be remembered that way for all of American history. And instead, he created that icon that we celebrate so much today. And thank you very much for your time, and I do encourage you to continue your visit downstairs. Have a great day.
Thanks again to Lauren for allowing us to broadcast this on the podcast. That was very informative and a great visit to Ford's Theater. Well, thanks for listening to Speaking of History, and we'll talk again soon. Bye.
The Speaking of History podcast is produced by Eric Langhorst in Liberty, Missouri, under a Creative Commons license. Visit the website for show notes and links to material in the podcast at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com. The podcast is also available on iTunes. Please email all comments and questions to speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Background music for the intro is Z from James Underberg from PodSafe Audio. Thanks for listening.